For once, all seemed right with the world, even if the world in question happened to be the one to which John Tom had been unwillingly transported, he reflected. It was a perfectly gorgeous autumn morning. Bright sunshine warmed his face, and there was a delicious bite to the air. Not only did all seem right with the world, he was also feeling especially good about himself. His studies had progressed to the point where even the wizard Clothahump was willing to concede that with continued practice and attention to detail, John Tom might actually be worthy of the sobriquet Spellsinger. The wizard had been in a particularly good mood lately. Some of that could be attributed to the fact that his apprentice, the Owl Sorbel, had sworn off liquor after coming out of a 3-day drunk. Only one problem remained. His fine morning mood notwithstanding, John Tom couldn't shake a vague feeling of unease. It wasn't anything specific, nothing he could put a claw on, but it had been nagging at him most of the morning. It was unconscionable for something so intangible to spoil his mood. Nothing like a good breakfast to banish lingering sensations of discontent, he mused as he bent over his tray. But though the annelids were fresh and the dried anemone crunchy and well-seasoned, the food failed to alleviate his discomfort. He turned toward the single window that let light into the cave, his eye stalks twisting for a better view. Beyond and below, the waves smashed against the sheer granite cliff. The damp air of his cavern hung perfumed with the sharp smell of salt and seawater. Dried algae and kelp decorated the floor and walls. Both suns stood high in the sky. The largest gleamed deep purple through the clouds, while its smaller companion shed its normal pale green light on the coastline. The purple clouds reflected his mood, but were not responsible for it. Turning away from the feeding tray, he used a lesser claw to wipe edible tidbits into his mouth. The tension caused his eye stalks to clench, and he made a deliberate effort to relax. Nerves, he thought. Nothing but nerves. Except he had no reason to be nervous. If all was right with the world, what was there to be nervous about? He shook himself and preened his eye stalks. Nothing helped. Something somewhere was seriously wrong. The sound made him shift from contemplation of his continued unease to the passageway that led out of his cave.
Good morning.
Moving lithely on 6 chitinous legs, Clothahump shuffled into the chamber. As befitted his age, his shell spread twice the diameter of John Tom's, though John Tom was more intimidated by the wizard's intellect than by his size. His mentor's eyes bobbed and danced on the ends of foot-long stalks that, like John Tom's, were a pale turquoise blue. Upon entering sideways, the wizard assumed a stance next to the window where he could inhale the full rush of salt-stained air. Settling his legs beneath him, he gestured with his primary claw.
A question for you, my boy. How are you feeling this morning? Anything troubling you? Headache? Nausea, perhaps?
Nothing. I feel great. It's a beautiful day. Except...
Except what?
Nothing, really. It's only that since I woke up this morning, well, it's hard to define. I don't feel 100%, and I should. There's something, a funny feeling of, I don't know. I just don't feel right.
You feel that something is not as it should be, but you are unable to define what it is?
Yes, exactly. You've been feeling the same thing?
Yes, indeed. I believe it woke me up.
Me too, but I can't pin it down.
Really? I should think you would have been able to by this time.
Before John Tom could respond, a 3-foot-long centipede wandered into the chamber. It peered mournfully up at Clothahump before glancing over at John Tom. He recognized the famulus immediately.
Sorbel, you've been drinking again. I thought you'd sworn off the stuff.
Sorry.
The centipede staggered toward the depression in the middle of the chamber, near John Tom.
But when I got a look at myself in the mirror this morning, well, you can imagine.
I can? Imagine what?
The centipede returned its sorrowful stare to its master.
Hasn't he figured it out yet?
Figured out what yet?
You don't notice anything unusual.
Unusual? No, I don't...
And then it hit him. That was his problem. He wasn't noticing. Noticing, for example, what was wrong with the wizard's assistant. Sorbel was an owl, approximately 3 feet in height, with wings to match, and vast yellow eyes, usually bloodshot. What he was not was a 3-foot-long centipede.
Holy shit, Sorbel, what happened to you?
What happened to me? What about what's happened to you? Or haven't you taken a look at yourself yet this morning?
Not possessing the right equipment for frowning, John Tom settled for clicking his lesser claw several times to indicate the extent of his confusion. Then he took the time to inspect himself. Nothing out of the ordinary. Everything was in its proper place. His 6 legs were folded neatly beneath him. His primary and lesser claws held out in front. His eye stalks enabled him to study every part of his body. Oh, his palps were still a mite grungy from breakfast, and his shell could use a cleaning, but other than that, everything appeared to be in good working order.
You still don't know what's wrong, do you?
No, I don't. I don't know what happened to transform Sorbel, but I can't be expected to...
Something went click inside his head. It was as if his eyes were lenses in a camera belonging to another individual entirely, and that individual had just released the shutter. He took another look at himself. A good look. A long look.
Oh.
Wishing for a sudden onset of blindness, John Tom stared around the chamber. Sorbel was not all that had been transformed. For openers, the wizard Clothahump did not live in a rocky, moisture-drenched cave that looked out over an ocean. He lived in a giant oak tree whose interior had been dimensionally enlarged by one of the sorcerer's spells. The oak grew in the middle of a forest called the Bellwoods, not by the shore of some unknown sea that foamed red instead of white against the rocks. Clothahump himself was a turtle, many hundreds of years old, not an arthropod of unknown origin. For that matter, he himself, Jonathan Thomas Merriweather, was a young man 6 feet 2 inches tall, a bit on the slim side, with shoulder-length brown hair and a thoughtful expression. He looked weakly down at himself for a second time. Nothing had changed since this revelation struck him. He was still a giant blue crab.
You would think, my boy, that you would have noticed the change before this, but I suppose readjustment takes more time when it occurs immediately upon awakening.
Readjustment? What the hell's going on? What's happened to you? What happened to Sorbel? What's happened to everything?
Well, my boy, it would appear that we are confronted by a problem of grave dimensions.
Oh, no. Why must it always be a problem of grave dimensions? Can't we ever be confronted by a problem of lighthearted dimensions? A problem of mild dimensions? A problem requiring only simple, straightforward solutions?
You are becoming hysterical, my boy.
I am not becoming hysterical! Sarcastic and mad and maybe a little crazy, but not hysterical!
At that moment, the enormous blue crab, which had been listening patiently to him, vanished. So did the algae and kelp-strewn wall of the cave, and the roar of the ocean outside, and the thick, tangy aroma of salt spray. The purple and green light that had illuminated the chamber was replaced with a warm, indistinct transparency. Clothahump the Wizard, the real Clothahump, sat facing him on a stool not 6 feet away, regarding his young guest calmly. The cave, too, had gone, to be replaced by the familiar surroundings of his own room. There he saw his bed, there his desk and chair, over in the corner the simple wash basin and spigots. Rising on shaky legs, 2 of them, he crossed to the basin, turned the cold water tap on full, and splashed it freely over his face and arms. As he dried himself, he felt with relief the soft, smooth skin that covered his arms.
I'm me again.
The world was normal once more. Or was it? What of the problem the wizard had alluded to? John Tom knew the turtle did not refer to such matters lightly, and he'd already been subjected to an intimate illustration of the seriousness of the problem.
You put everything right again. I mean, I'm myself again, and you're you, and the world is what it ought to be. Everything is as it should be.
Indeed, that is so. Except, I am distressed to admit, none of it occurred at my bidding.
You mean you didn't bring things back to normal?
Absolutely not, my boy, any more than I bent them askew in the first place.
Then... it could happen again? I could turn back into a giant blue crab?
Oh yes, most certainly, at any moment. And myself also, just as Sorbel could turn back into that crawly thing he was, and this comfortable tree back into a damp cave.
All right. But I don't understand. Things like that don't just happen.
Ah, but we have indisputable evidence that it did, my boy. Furthermore, should it happen again, the effects could be
quite different.
What do you mean, different?
I mean that next time the world might become less recognizable still. At any moment, without warning of any kind.
It wasn't an illusion, then? I actually changed. You and Sorbel actually changed.
Quite so. The entire world transformed. You did not imagine that you were a large blue crab. You became a large blue crab.
I wasn't sure. I thought that maybe...
Maybe what, my boy?
John Tom found it difficult to meet the wizard's gaze.
That maybe you were playing some kind of elaborate joke. You're always testing me.
A not unreasonable assumption on your part, save for the fact that I never engage in anything as juvenile as practical jokes. This was no test. I wish it were so.
John Tom nodded thoughtfully, then reached for the duar, hanging by its shoulder strap from one of his bed's corner posts. He slipped the strap over his shoulder and cradled the instrument against his ribs. Now it was the wizard's turn to look discomforted.
What are you going to do with that, my boy?
While John Tom's control over his spell singing had improved dramatically under the turtle's tutelage, it was still far from precise. His ability to evoke marvelous things with his music was still matched only by his inability to control them.
I'm just holding it. Does Claw the Hump still regard me as nothing more than an amateur? Do you think that after all my practicing, I still don't know what I'm doing?
I could not have put it better myself.